brings us to Dr. Wesson and oysters.
Yep.
Good afternoon. The original item on the agenda was our punishment program for this year and the procurement procedures, but we've had a couple of items come up, and so they're all kind of interrelated. So I'm going to, you know, first go through a bunch of stuff and mention how it actually impacts other things we're going to talk about, but and then probably get an approval of that, and then move on to the other issues from that. And we had we were supposed to have had a shellfish management meeting last week, and because of the weather, we didn't. So it would have normally been in your briefing, but we got pushed to last night. So we had a lot of stuff happen last night that we didn't expect. So just generally, I mean, you can't go anywhere without hearing the press on how well we, you know, oysters are in Virginia. What we're talking about today is the blue part here. We're talking about the public. We're talking about what we manage when we're managing public grounds. And we, back in 2007, we had a Blue Ribbon Orchard panel that gave us a lot of the guidance on the stuff that we do, and there was a recommendation back then that we actually need at least $2.5 million a year to do a good program, and didn't get it right off, but then starting a couple of years ago, the governor put in a $2 million budget item for us, which is less than the amount that they recommended in 2007. And what's happened over the years is that the cost of doing everything has gone up so much that we are almost back to where we were when we didn't have big money. But the big money is great, and we can't do without it. But as you'll see, it's not nearly enough to where we need to be to maintain ourselves. The first few things that I'm going to show are just some of the little projects that we're doing. We always do some seed orchards with the user fees that the watermen provide and their $300 user fee. We don't get sets in the Potomac tributary, so we try to move a few seed every year from the James River to those rivers, which is a pretty much even move, low salinity to low salinity, so that we don't have disease issues. It's expensive, costs $8.50 a bushel to get them up there. And unfortunately, we don't get great reporting. I think we get much better harvest up there than what we see in the reporting. But this year, we're going to do 5,000 bushels in the Nomni, where we've maintained a pretty good fishery, and we're going to try 5,000 bushels in the Cone. Last year, we tried 5,000 bushels in Ucomico. They seem to be doing okay. 10 years ago, we probably would not have tried that, but it seems like they're living a little bit better right now than what we had seen. We're also going to move 5,000 bushels from the Coratomin River to Area 6 in the Rappahannock. And Area 6 was open this year. One of the areas that was open in the rotation areas. And that part of the rotation areas in the Rappahannock rarely sees a spat set. I mean, we hope for them. Every now and then we see one, but generally we do not. And that's right out in front of Urbana. And we have a bar that's up here in the Coratomin that we used to have open, but we found that we actually see decent sets in the Coratomin. And so we set it aside to see if we could develop an area we could move some seed in the Rappahannock from. And what we see there is we get sets, but the anoxia kills the oysters, so we rarely see market oysters. So we're going to move 5,000 bushels from there over to Rotation Area 6, so at least we get a little bit growing for when Area 6 comes back around 3 years from now. The Corps of Engineers had a project that you've done in the commission. They've been talking about for almost 3 years now to refurbish some of their reefs in Great Wicomico. And one of the parts of their refurbishment was to take the live orchards off and move them in a complicated process from reef to reef to reef with pretty poor instructions for the contractor. And every time they bid this out, it came in at $950,000 to do this project. Well, they finally gave up on that and said that we're just going to, they just take their shells and cover these live oysters up. So we asked them, you know, could we move those oysters for them, clean them off, and you know, I made a boo-boo on that. It's $30,000. That costs about $3 a bushel, we think, to move them. So for $30,000, we can clean 10,000 bushels of oysters off, and we can put them on our rotation areas just outside the area and use those oysters and have them not closed up, covered up. Now, this project won't. They're still outbidding it, and they still don't have enough money for even the complicated nature that they're saying that they want for the shell planting. So we may or may not do this. We're not going to move those oysters if they can't get a bid to do the reshelling. So, you know, this project is one that may or may not happen, but we're ready for it if it does. For about 10 years now, we've had a good program in both the Piangtank and the Great Wicomico to allow private industry to take seeds from the areas and to either replace the shell themselves or pay for the replacement, just pay us directly for it so we can get it replaced. And we've not had as great of sets in the past couple of years as we've had before, but we still have enough that we think we can move some. This just shows how it looks in the Great Wicomico when you compare our areas here side by side with the ones in the core. They look like they're following basically the same track, even though we started harvesting ours in 2010, and I mean, it seems like it has little impact on it. They kind of go up and down together based on spat set. Same thing in the Piangtank. These reefs we harvest, we've been harvesting since way back in 2006, and they actually, there's more oysters on the harvest areas than there are on the or more oysters per meter on harvest areas than the ones that we've left alone. So it seems like it's a stable process, but we do kind of look every year at our stock assessment to figure out how much we can take and not hurt things. Shells are the big issue. If there's a big chart in there just after the briefing that shows, based on the stock assessment that we did this past fall, that we do jointly with them's, We not only do assessment of the oysters, living oysters, but we also do assessment of the condition of the shell. And right now we have more than 1,400 acres of bars that are in need of shell to the point that they probably won't recruit very well if they don't get any shell. But because of the rise in the cost of shells that it's getting up around $4 a bushel to do them, we're probably only going to be able to do about 500 of those acres. So the other 900 acres are pretty much going to continue to deteriorate. And even though we have this wonderful appropriation of $2 million, it only goes so far. And one of the big issues that came up last night was a debate over whether we should use dredge shell that we have sites up the James River that we can mine for fossil shells that we then barge those down and we plant them on the areas. And that's that'll be around $4 a bushel. That's the price I have here. But the big question was, well, shouldn't we just raise the price that we want to pay for house shells and buy them? And we have been in this shell escalation phase for these number of years. I mean, when I started out here, we were paying 50 cents a bushel for house shells. And if you look at the long-term history on what we did shells as a state, when oysters were doing great and people were planting on our private ground, they didn't want to sell to us, and we used almost exclusively dredged fossil shells. Then in the 80s, when things started dying, then nobody wanted to do planting, so these shells were sitting on the pile, and they were asking us to please buy the shells and use them for replenishment. And we could maintain a good relationship, and we did it very efficiently. And, you know, it's 50 cents, and it went to 75 cents. But then here recently, you know, we got up to 2007 when we had the Blue Room panel. We were up to a dollar, which was still reasonable. But then there was a lot of things started happening in aquaculture to start working. We had a lot of partners that wanted to use Shell. We had all these ideas going on in Maryland along with our stuff. And then we come in there and we get $2 million. And the first year they wanted to raise the price to $1.50 for their Shell. Then last year when it got $2 million again, they said, well, we'd be happy with two, and we'll kind of stay there for a while. But then we got another $2 million this year, and the first thing I hear is that they want $3 for them. So I don't know where that's going to end, but I don't really want us to be in the bidding process with private industry and setting the baseline price for a Shell that if somebody can negotiate better prices, that they shouldn't be able to buy them. And so I recommended to the commission in our procurement procedures that we stay at the $2 that we agreed on last year and they said was good enough, and that if they don't want to sell to us at $2, then they can make more money. Then that, as long as the Shells are going overboard on private or somewhere, they're producing oysters. And we will use the best price that we can come up with, which is the $4, about $4. And we some of our areas in the, we'll be able to do less than four, some a little bit over four, but the average will be around $4 for the dread shell. They basically passed a motion last night that, you know, they approved all the rest of the plan except for they wanted us to buy at least $150,000 of the at $3 a bushel from the houses, and which would mean changing the price we set. And I still would recommend that we stay where we are because we did have an agreement last year that we were good enough, and just see how, again, just kind of wait and see if this situation changes over time. But no matter what it is, I mean, our goal is to try to get as many bushels on the ground as we possibly can, as many acres done, and the best buy for us right now, even though we know it's a finite resource, are these fossil shells. And the other issue that we have involved with that is that the barge and the equipment that does this shell dredging is the only one in the world like that. And it is a giant piece of machinery that could easily, it actually dredges shells, washes them, sorts them, and loads them on barges all in one operation. And then we move the barges and we plant it. So it's about as efficient as you can be. It's the only one in the world. And there is an economy of scale that the more we do, the lower we get it for. So our hope is that the Corps gets their project off the ground this year, and they'll be doing shells the same time we're doing shells, and all of us will actually get shells cheaper than the $4, because that's where we get the economy. But there is a possibility that, like last year, that we get left holding the bag, and we're the only person paying for this dredge to come down here, and so you have to pay a higher price than you would. And if we raise the price and buy some of the house shells, then that lowers the amount that we have to offer for the dredging, and I'm not sure whether they'll even come for lower amounts, and if they do, they'll charge a higher amount per bushel because they've always got their mobilization and demobilization in the cost, and we only get savings according to how much they do. So it's, you know, I wish that shells were easy. They used to be really easy, but now they're more complicated. But where that leaves us is, you know, we look out at things coming for the future, and did this little schematic that I'll mention again in a few minutes. But if you look at these areas, these are ones that are going to be open next year, and the yellow ones are areas that we're seeing really big declines in shell. We're seeing really big declines in the potential productivity. And you know, our workhorses for our harvest have been the Rappahannock, the James, and the Tangier Pocomoke. And we've two out of three have really bad shell situations. And, you know, I just did, from our stock assessment, all these areas in Pocomoke need new shell, which are a lot of acres. They look little because you've got a great big sound I'm showing there. We won't be able to do all of these areas. These areas in Tangier, these little pink areas, the river's so big that the areas look small, but each of those areas is, you know, taking 40, 50,000 bushels of shell, so that the shells don't go very far, and we won't get them all, but we're going to try to concentrate this year on those, on those areas, along with a couple areas in the James where at least our real big producers, we continue to keep some new shells going on them. Now, along with that, you know, last year we did a project with the Nature Conservancy to test some alternative shell, their culch. Last year we used ground concrete in the Piang tank, and we picked a size that was about the size of a big shell, and it worked. We could use it in our shell boats. We could wash it off, handle it in conveyor just like we did shell, and it worked very well. And we got the highest spat set of anywhere in the Piang tank on the area that we did in the Piang tank with that. But we also had hopes that this would be a harvesting substitute also. And so we did an area in the Rappahannock that we could test our harvesting gear. This one is a sanctuary in the Piang tank, so we don't have to worry about it. It's going to be left alone, and orchards are very happy on it with the size shell. But when we started running the harvest test on the ones in the Rappahannock, we got a good set there for the Rappahannock, which is much lower than the Piang tank in general. What we see is that the weight of that concrete is enough that it's crushing the live oysters, because the oyster shell is softer than the concrete. So we want to do another little project this year in the Rappahannock, in Area 1, which just closed. We got 3 years there. It works of stepping down a size in the size of the particle, the stone that we use. And this year we're going to try granite, straight from the quarry, granite that's about 2 inches. You're walking a line between you can't get too small, because if you get too small, then there are not enough interstitial spaces for the larvae to get up underneath the rocks and attach. If you get, you know, real tight, small gravel, you've got to get a gravel size that's got little places that larvae can get in and under and escape predators. So we're going to try that size and see how it works. And we didn't finish up the Nature Conservancy last year, so we found a second area here in the Piang Tank to continue with the same size material we were using for sanctuaries and finish up that project. And then we have this one in the Rappahannock that we're going to try a smaller stone size to see if that'll be better for harvest. If we can get a small enough size that it actually, when you pull a dredge, the ones that don't have orchards go on through and don't get caught up, and if they're lighter, they shouldn't bounce on the shells and kill the oysters in the process. So, at least for this part, we need approval of the plan, but the main thing we need approval of is our procurement procedures that are outlined in there for, you know, when we set prices on things and notice that we've set the price for seed and shell and everything. So we have a unique code section in 550 that we can do things different than the normal request for proposals that a lot of people have to do. And the bigger projects, we still do request for proposals, but we use Waterman and the industry as much as we can for the smaller projects, setting the price on things. Any questions on that part?
Mr. Erskine.
Jim, I don't know if I don't want to break tradition here maybe, but it seemed with SMAC last night that the majority of that plan of the 2005 Oyster Replenishment Plan was well supported, and the shell planting effort had a tremendous amount of discussion, as you indicated. Is it best for the commission to maybe take that in two motions or as two subject matters and take out the shell planting piece and maybe look to approve all the other matters and then have a separate discussion about the shell planting?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. I'll make a motion to do that.
A motion to separate them out. Or are you
correct.
Making a motion to approve?
I'm making a motion to separate the two out and take out the shell planting piece, which I anticipate might have more discussion about it since it was contentious at SMAC, and take the rest of the 2015 Oyster Replenishment Plan as a separate agenda, a separate item.
Okay, well,
how about we continue as we are now to hear the rest of the briefing here, and then we'll double back on this, and we'll pull out what you want to approve that everybody agrees on. We can move that forward. We can move the procurement process forward, and then we'll double back to the Shell planting.
Okay.
How's that? Does that work for you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that completes the replacement stuff, that part of that it would have been. I mean, I got nothing for a regulation but change, but as far as replenishment goes, this completes it.
Okay. And the procurement process,
yeah.
We're all set on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to approve it.
All right. Yes. Well, let's take step number one here. Let's approve, if you would like to, approve the procurement process. That's a critical point.
Well, that one can't be approved unless you agree. If you want to change the what I've set the price at, that has to be changed.
Ah, now I see the point.
Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Well, then, let's move forward here with pulling the Shell planting part out and approve the rest of this. Is that what you would like?
It was only a suggestion. If it gets more confusing, Jim, because the procurement is throughout the oyster plan, then I guess we'll just take it as whole agenda item. It's up to you. I just it was clearly the most talked about item last night was the Shell planting. So I just thought if we take that out, then the rest of the plan would be approved, I would think. It had unanimous support.
Well, there's one place that it will impact it. We base the cost of the seed for the private public on the cost of Shell. So if we raise the price of the Shell, we'll raise the price of the seed. So you may want to do the Shell first.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, then how about, yeah, all right, then that makes sense. Let's move forward with the Shell planting part of all this. And then once we see where we're setting with that, we can adjust the rest as necessary.
Okay.
Shell planting then becomes the immediate topic at hand here. I would imagine Mr. Erskine has a few things to say about that.
Well, we discussed it at length last night at SMAC, and there was a lot of comment, I guess, about it. There was a separate motion that was made, and that motion, if I'm correct, was to request that this commission approve paying $3 per bushel for what you call house shells, oyster shucking house shells, 150,000 bushels of those, and the balance of it would be made up of this dredged or fossil shell.
Let me ask why. What's the thinking there?
Go ahead.
From what I understand in the past couple of years, when the house shells aren't purchased at a higher price, they're sold out of state. They go out of state, and the shells are not being put back in Virginia waters because Maryland and other states are paying more for the house shells, for Virginia shells, than we're offering.
I got a question here.
Mr. Beaver.
What you were saying, though, is that this dredge has got to have a minimum to even come down here.
Yeah.
And so if what I understand his motion to be is going to buy these house shells, and so that's going to decrease. If what I'm hearing here, if this motion here to buy so many house shells is going to decrease the amount of material this dredge is going to need, and that's going to affect the dollar sign on that,
yes,
as well.
Yes. So the average will go up. Yeah.
So we're fighting against
You'll
each other.
You'll get less shells on the bottom.
And the price per bushel through the mining operation is estimated to be?
Well, I hope it'll be better than four. I mean, I'm putting four out as the worst case. I mean, it. You never know. I mean, if we can get the core to work same time, we'll get in the threes. I mean, we were in the low threes last year for the James River and around four for the far areas. So it that's the overboard price. Now, when you're setting the price at $3 at the house, that's the price sitting on the pile. We still have to pay for loading, transporting, and planting, which puts the price over $4 for them on the bottom. And when you talk about going to other states, well, most of the places they're going are to Maryland. And Maryland, our processors buy just as many oysters from Maryland as they do from Virginia in many cases. And Maryland is a very different situation than Virginia. They're a weird state, and they
that's in the public record.
They don't do the DNR does not do shell planting anymore on harvest areas. They are doing 100% sanctuaries with their money. The money that would be that is bidding everything up, and I hope this thing is going to change down the road, is they give an allotment to each county, and they have county committees that can get shells for their own local shell planting close to them. And they get a quantity of money that doesn't belong to them, and they don't care what price they pay as long as they spend that money, because if they don't spend the money, they won't get it again. So if they pay $4 or $5 a bushel or whatever, it's not impacting them in the long run. They're just spending their money. So it's a very different situation from our management strategy. And even if we set the price at $3, we're not guaranteed that they're going to sell to us at $3 if they can get $4 from somebody else. And it basically sets us as saying we think shells are worth $3. And so every private person that's trying to negotiate a deal out there, they know that they're going to pay $3 going into it. We're in a very odd situation with shells right now. It's like gold, and those who have it, and those that don't. So, yeah.
Ms. Hurston.
So I personally need to be a little bit careful here, because I do work for two oyster shucking houses that have shell, and I will abstain from any vote that takes place. But I do just want to offer some perspective on what we discussed last night. And a lot of the discussion was not just about a price per se. It was a lot of discussion about what is most beneficial and effective for oyster restoration and replenishment. The house shell is a whole oyster shell. The fossilized dredge shell is not a whole shell. It's thinner. It's in cinders at times. The way it packs on the bottom when you put this shell overboard, it doesn't have the interstitial space between it that whole oyster shells do when they're put on the bottom. Jim spoke about larvae with the rock size of the granite or the rocks that are put overboard. You need to have that kind of space for the larvae to be able to strike. One thing's for sure, these house shells are going to be used somewhere. They don't stay on the ground. Everything goes back into a system. We use a lot of it privately, and we'll continue to do that. Maryland is far higher than $3 per bushel. The reason that I think these oyster houses want to take a lower price, the $3 per bushel, is because they want it to stay in Virginia. And when it goes to Maryland, it's not helping the Virginia replenishment program. As far as the dredge contractor that would come down here, we're held to what he's going to do. And right now, he has us exactly where he wants us, quite honestly. He's going to come down for $2 million or $1 million, or he's going to make the decision. But you may in fact be utilizing a finite resource, where I see the fossilized shell as a rainy day resource you have available to you, what I feel would be a more superior product going on the bottom. Even if it is slightly more per bushel and you don't get as much restoration, number of acres restored and planted, I still think it's a superior product. And that's the important part of this, is hopefully we all have the interest of the industry at heart in utilizing these funds, which we're very gracious for, as best as possible. So the house shells are available, and hopefully they get used in Virginia. But they certainly will be used one way or the other.
Can I ask him a question?
Mr. Zedrin.
Is there a limit, a finite amount of how many of those shells you can buy from the house shells?
I think the discussion we had last night, Jim, you estimated there might be 300,000 bushels available.
Yeah. And how much do you anticipate you need to do the replacement project?
Well, if we bought all the 300,000 for $3, and then when we couldn't take it, we wouldn't know what to do with the rest of the money because the dredger wouldn't come down here for that.
No, but what I'm saying is, what do you estimate you need to do the projects you've got up here? How many bushels?
Oh, I mean, the projects up here, I need 1.4 million this year, bushels.
Here's what I'm going with. If you only got 150,000 bushels and he needs a million, we got to do something here different because you need what you need, and you guys got only a finite amount to sell. So where's the rest going to come in if the dredge doesn't come down?
That was discussed as well, and the total that Jim is looking for is probably around 500,000 bushels. So the Virginia house shells was estimated at 300,000, and you needed 500,000 with the 2 million that's available to do that. And of course, it does fluctuate a little bit as the price of the fossilized or dredge shell, you know, goes up.
Okay, now here's a question to your dredge guy. What is the minimum that he will process, come down here and process?
We were close to it last year, and we did that 1.5 last year. $1 million, yeah.
Dr. Weston, the fossil shell deposit, what's the latest estimation on how much longer it will last?
Well, the ones that we have permitted, probably 5 to 10 years. The ones, there are other sites that could conceivably be permitted that have quite a few years of life in them, but, you know, we've not had to go looking yet. But, you know, there was a big debate last night on which one's better. I mean, we've been using both for a long time, and, you know, it's really hard to do a side-by-side test, but we can't see in our stock assessment any difference between shells. It does look like dredge shells last a little bit longer than house shells as far as the degradation process that we see because they've already gone through some fossilization. They're not fossil shells. They're just ancient shells, but they are more metallic, so they do not get as much of the boring sponge as house shells do. But house shells are a little bit bigger. But in our sorting process on the up at the place, we sort out fines from whole shells, and we only buy the whole shells. The fines go for another purpose, and so we don't get little bits. I mean, you get... If you imagine any orchard bed, you get what is out there when that thing got covered over. It's just like our beds. You have a few market orchards, and you have a few smaller orchards, and you have a few little orchards. You got a whole age class, and we're dredging up old reefs. So you get all those different shells mixed together. But the small ones, if it's less than this, they get sorted out into a fine category that we don't buy.
Mr. Cedar.
Have we looked at, now the money we talk about, he's talking about buying these shells from the house. These are Virginia shells, right?
Yes.
Have we looked at the economic impact that goes back into our economy buying it from the shell houses versus the money that you're paying this guy from wherever to bring his machine here?
No, the machine is lucky for us as it lives in Maryland. That's where the company is. And it's always been. It's been there for 40 years or more. And when it comes down here, I mean, it's, you know, the profit goes back to the company, but it's using Virginia tugs and it uses Virginia barges. It's just a big machine that lives at at Love Point or right near Annapolis.
Was there any study done on your end about the economic impact, you know?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
I mean, the shells are going to get sold somewhere either way, so.
the price, at least what we talked about last night as well, I think Jim was estimating $4 per bushel for the dredge shells, and it's about $1.75 to transport, to haul, load, transport, and plant on top of the $3. So you're talking about a difference between $4 for the dredge shell and $4.75 per bushel for the house shells. So that's the difference roughly.
Yes, but noting that if this is a combined joint operation with a Corps with their needs, the price goes down into the $3.50 or so.
Never guaranteed with them.
So there's a chance it could be lower in a price per bushel versus an assurance that it'll be higher with the house shell per bushel. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, couldn't the Marine contractor turn around? I don't want to play devil's advocate here, but I mean, the Marine contractor could turn around and tell you tomorrow fuel went up and we're going to charge you $4.50 a bushel. I don't know, but anything can happen, certainly.
Mr. Ballard, then Mr. Mill.
I think one of the most important things to consider here is, too, the success that you'll have with the substrate that we're using. To be clear, my company does not sell shell. We're a net user of it, so we're actually buying it. And we do remote setting in tanks, and we found we wouldn't be in business if we were using fossilized shell in a remote setting application. Granted, it's different than the wild, but what we'd find spat catch per oyster on a house shell is 6 times of what we'd found on a fossilized shell. So it's not just what each shell costs, but I would argue on a yield basis, you're looking at a much better return on house shell than you would be on fossilized shell. It's harder to measure, and the tanks are different than in the wild, but we saw it pretty dramatically.
But the fossilized shell that you're using is like the stuff that comes from the seaside, right?
Right.
That's not the same as this.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
This is kind of a question. So basically, staff wants to keep their offering price of the shell at $2 to the house shell. And out of your committee, you recommended $3, but then you've also stated that you could sell it for higher to Maryland or wherever else. But then also at the committee, the recommendation was to require VMRC to buy a certain number of bushels at $3. So I don't know, is that true?
Mm-hmm.
So what would stop the house, the shuckers, whoever, to decide to sell to Maryland at a higher price? I guess my question is, if you're telling me you must buy this many bushels at $3 a bushel, and then the market's not there, and then the market is at $5 a bushel, and that's too much of a difference. So I guess what I'm seeing by that recommendation, you would be making it so you would make it legally impossible for these guys to actually purchase shell.
I think the actual motion, and I don't have it specifically, was for VMRC to pay fair market price for a bushel of shell. There are some that would consider it to be higher than $3 per bushel, yes. I think what Jim indicated last night at the SMAC meeting was he has understood it to be $3 a bushel. I think if there were an agreement between VMRC and the shucking houses that it's $3 a bushel, that's what it is. Just like it was last year, there was an agreement it was $2 a bushel. I don't think that would change, the price to all of a sudden be $5 or something.
I guess the way that motion was, though, would make it so that we'd be requiring VMRC to buy this many bushels at some unknown price. And so then we have no cap on the amount of dollars that we're telling VMRC they must spend on this shell.
It would be $3, right, Jim?
That was the latest I heard from one of us is that he wouldn't sell it if I was free.
I'm just telling you what the SMAC motion was.
Yeah, I understand that. And I'm trying to understand it.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Sessions.
Why can't VMRC go into it to buy the cheapest shell for a bushel?
That's what we try to do.
I mean, in other words, bid it out like you would anything else to the house and to the dredge guy to get the best bang for the buck. We want to buy 500,000 bushels. How much are you going to give it to us for? You know, house, group and dredge guys.
But he said he didn't have 300,000 bushels.
I mean, that would be a departure, but actually it would be something that we could actually do in our RFP. We could make it available to houses, too, to do the house shells low bid at the same time we were doing dredge shell. I mean, it would be in the same RFP. But, I mean, we could do that.
Would that give you the flexibility you need at the end to be able to decide the best bang for the buck?
Well, the only place we would run into a problem there is if they say you'd have to be able to do the whole project. That would have to be a part of it. You couldn't say I'm willing to do 10,000 bushels at a lower price than everybody else, and that's all we do in that RFP, because there has to be some kind of an even playing ground for a bid process, so that, you know, we would say we need this many acres done and the lowest price to get it done, with given the option of either using house shells or,
you know, or, you know, you can be creative in your bid on your RFP, say per 200,000 bushels.
Yeah.
You know, let's bid it out per 200,000 bushels.
Well,
or something like that.
Yeah, except for if you take away a few of those increments, then the shell dredger wouldn't be able to mobilize for that.
Well, I guess you need to find out what his minimum is.
Can I ask another question?
It's much easier when we set the price, I think.
Mr. Zeter.
Would BMRC have to go to a bunch of individuals to buy these house shells, or are they got to go to every?
Yeah, we put a notice out every December to all the shucking houses and saying, you know, we're just buying shells. Do you have some shells that you're willing to sell to us?
We do with the individuals.
We send that to every shucking house.
Right. How would, I don't know nothing about this. I'm a fisherman, all right? How does he know that he can buy 150,000 or 300,000 bushels of oysters, even from these guys that you put the notice to? I mean, they can just at any whim do something else with this, right?
Well, it would be like any type of bid process. You would get an RFP out, and then the bid would be signed by the president of the company or whoever owns the house, and they'd be bound by it, the price and the quantity. It would be a legal contract. Which, of course, could be broken, but, I mean, it would be a legal binding contract between BMRC and the supplier or suppliers.
All right, Jim, will you do me a favor? Would you back up over the original plan so that now we can compare the two a little bit better?
The original plan is that we set the price on everything like we've always done, and the price that we've set right now is the price that I had agreement from everybody last year. This is where they'll stay for a while, and that was $2 a bushel for house shell. And anything else that we do is done through an RFP, a competitive bid.
Do you actually get any takers at $2 a bushel? Do we buy any house shells at that level?
Last year I did. That's okay. The price that
about how many bushels was it last year?
I think we got about 150, 200,000, something like last year.
Okay, and then the balance was the dredge material. So if we have, how many total bushels did we do last year?
How many bushels of which one?
Total bushels of shell altogether.
Well, the amount of house shells ended up coming up like $400,000, so we had like $1.6 million to put in the shells, and we, according to what area you went to, the dredge sites up in the James, so the James River sites are cheaper because you got less tug time. Then the York River was the next, and then the Rappahannock and Tangier. They all had different prices. But the reason that I'm projecting for this year as a way for me to guess what I might get is that we need to go up and do the Rappahannock and do Tangier and Pocomoke. They are the two most expensive places I have to go. We need to do as much as we can do in those two areas because they're the workhorses for our fishery, and we've kind of we've kind of, because the price has been cheapest in the James, I've kind of fudged on doing more in the James the past several years. And so we're okay down there. So I might end up doing one place down there. But the majority of the money is going to be up the bay where the tug time is more. And at least in theory, I mean, the fuel is almost 40% less this year than it was last year. So I'm hoping that the prices will reflect that, because that was one of the killers last year, was the fuel prices.
Mr. Cedar.
Ask him something more. The oysters you're talking about buying from the house, what, $3 a bushel or $4?
No, the it was $3.
$3 on the pile.
Well, and he says he's got 150 bushel, right? 150,000. So it's how much is that? That's
well, it's overboard. It'll be about 450 or something times 150.
All right, from my point of view, let's just do four.
So you're talking about $600,000,
okay? Yeah. And you said you spent last year like $1.2 million.
1.6.
1.6. Well, if you bought the 150,000 bushels for him, not him, but I mean whoever they represent, you'd spend $600,000 and you'd have $1.4 million for this other guy to go through with his project, and that would be probably about what you would spend, what you spent last year.
Well, no, we're spending $2 million. It's just that he probably, I'm not positive he'll come here for 1.4.
Okay.
Because he was really skating last year, because we had anticipated the core working last year.
I hear the argument. I guess I'm coming to the point here where what the staff recommendation is what's been working for the last few years. I don't think I've heard anything here that changes the dynamic in my mind here to go to something different that has a clear benefit to the house shells from a financial aspect, but it doesn't necessarily, from what I'm hearing, demonstrate an improvement in the replenishment totality. Do you see what I mean?
You asking me?
It's a rhetorical question.
let me ask
Mr. Zidra.
Gentleman at the end there. You said the house shells produce, what, 6 to 10 times as much oysters as the shick.
But that's not a comparison. That's a different type of dredge shell than that's catching a dredge shell from the surface of an area that's already been through the process that we see going on with shells in nature, and calling that a dredge shell. We're doing subterranean mined shells that are very different quality than those. Because we use the ones he's talking about also on Seaside, because that's really all we have out there. And they do not set as well, but they are better than nothing. We use those out there. And
to answer your question, though, I do believe they are separate shells. I do believe there's not a person who has experience setting in the industry that would tell you they get as good a set on fossilized shell, whether it be from the Seaside or from the James River, as they do on house shells. That being said, after hearing all this, if, you know, we think the cap is $300,000 worth or 300,000 bushels of house shells, that's clearly not going to fulfill our needs. And if we don't have any dredge shell, I would think we'd be at a point in limbo where the benefit we get from house shells would not be greater than the detriment of only having half the amount of shells that we actually need. But at some point, I think we're going to reach a crossover point there, where the increased yield from house shell will make up for possibly having less bushels than we might a fossilized shell. And we'll just have to look at that. And I think it would also be prudent to figure out what this dredger would actually come down here for, so we can analyze that.
Mr. Sessions.
Yeah, I just think, and again, I'm going back to when I build a building, I'm going to bid it out. I think if you go to the house guys and you go to the dredge and get a bid on it, you're going to get the best price. And I think there's a way to craft an RFP, taking into consideration the quantities, to make that work. I mean, you've already said that we buy house shell and dredge shells both for a project, right? So I think putting out an RFP and see who will give the best price, I have a feeling some of those house people might come off the $3 a bushel, and maybe the dredge guy will too.
Let me ask you a question. Who plants the shells that you buy from the house? Who transports them and plants them, all that kind of stuff?
They do.
Well, I thought you said a minute ago that the dollar amount was in the pile at the...
Yeah, no, but we pay an additional price for $3 on the pile, but we pay a different price for loading them, transporting them, putting them on a barge, and replanting them.
Well, that was the question. So somebody else does that?
No, it's usually their own people.
Oh, okay. And then how do they get planted?
Their own boats.
Oh, okay.
We don't, just for record, we don't plant them. We only have the resource there. So.
And this barge guy does it all, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that company does it all.
Well, this has been an informative discussion. What do you all want to do?
I guess I have one question for AJ. Is it true that if we're capped at 300,000 bushels of house shells, we don't know what this dredger will do, but what's the answer if we do this and then we're only fulfill half of our $2 million? Where are we going to get the shells?
I think the discussion last night was 150,000 bushels would leave enough bushels out there for the contractor to,
okay,
to come down and do that, according to what you did last year. I think that's why the 150,000 bushels of house shells was chosen, because at 450, that gives you still the 1.4 or 1.5 million, whatever, to still have the contractor come down and dredge the shells. Because you're right, the 300,000 bushels of available house shell does not fill the project, so there would be a deficit, you know, there. But again, just like this discussion, it was an interesting discussion last night as well. So I don't think there's really a clean, easy answer to this. The bottom line is everybody was looking for what is best, what's going to perform best. That's what everybody was thinking.
The overarching thing that we have facing us that I'll get into in the next part of it is that we have been 3 years out of the last four without spat sets. We have areas that are deteriorating in shell faster than we can put shell back on them. And when they deteriorate, then even if we get luck into a recruitment event that larvae are produced, if there are no shells there, there'll be nothing for them to attach to. So, one thing I was trying to impress on everybody last night in both discussions is that, you know, we've ridden this high, and everybody is so up on the way it's been that they can't visualize the fact that we can flip and go the other way pretty quickly. And what we're seeing in stock assessment is that, yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. And the only two things that really get us anywhere are shells and natural spat set. I mean, that drives everything. And if you don't have the shells, if you haven't a spat set event, then you won't have anything to catch. And so, you know, staffs, you know, what I try to do is just to put the most shell I can put on the bottom with the amount of money that I have, and that's what I'm striving to find. And you know, they make a big deal about one contractor driving the situation, but this contractor has stayed with the bay for 40 years with a piece of equipment that is so unique and so big. And sometimes I can't imagine how they produce shells for the price that they do. And, you know, we don't want to take any chance of losing that production capacity, quibbling over a few cents per bushel. Hopefully Maryland, as a new administration, they're actually thinking about looking for a dredge site again. They have more buried shell than Virginia has by quantum amount. So, I mean, probably 10 or 15 times what we have in known quantities of shell. And, you know, if this dredger, if they start dredging again up there, then both of us benefit, because then we get an economy of scale that we used to have, where both states were working. We've just gone through this. I mean, it's been amazing that this piece of equipment has been maintained through this downturn in Orchards, and it's still there as we're coming out of it. So it's, you know, it, all the shells are going overboard from the houses. And, you know, with the situation changing the way it's changing, our spatsets being down and our shells going down so rapidly, you know, I went to the houses this year actually asking them to lower their prices and work with us to try to, because they're the buyer of all the product. And 5 years from now, if we find that we've priced ourselves out of being able to do shells and we have no oysters, then how do you get back?
Mr. Caesar.
You know, I guess something else here that we need to look at. You know, you talk about your RFPs and things like that, but normally when you're doing RFPs, you've got a lot of competing businesses got the same kind of assets, and then they just juggle their numbers with their employees and stuff like that. This is what we call a sole source, and because there isn't nobody else like that in America anyway, isn't that right? And I think that I was trying to find some way to go for the oyster houses and this, but it don't look like there's enough money for that. But if we don't go this route and that contractor either goes to some other state or goes out of business, where are we next year? And I think we need to look at that, you know.
Mr. Sessions.
Are you buying from just one house, or are you buying from more than one house?
We buy from anybody that would sell to us once we set a price.
See, there, I think we've got several sources. I think the several houses.
The total amount we're still talking about is maybe 300,000 of everybody together.
So if you did a RFP or a bid out in increments of 150,000 bushels, you can include the houses and the dredge guy. Well, the dredge guy might come in at some crazy number, and we go with him, $2 a bushel or something. But we won't know until we bid it out. He ain't going to come up with the cheapest price.
I need to ask another one.
How
do you figure out which of these houses you buy from the shells?
Well, in the old days, everybody wanted to sell everything, so we just bought everything they had. Now we buy what they will sell us that they haven't committed to other private people or whatever, or plant for themselves, or they're using for spat on shell. And when we put the notices out and what our procurement procedures say, we buy up to the amount that we say, and that's as much as we buy. I mean, that's in the procurement procedures that we put out there.
What's the path forward?
Jim,
would you explain your proposal for the way you do this normally?
The way I do it normally is to set a price, you know, based on experience and past years for the house shells, buy as many house shells as they'll sell, and the rest I bid out for fossil shells.
Is that your proposal this year?
That's the proposal that was included in your packet. It was the price that we agreed upon last year that they said at that time would be good for several years.
Mr. Neal.
I'm going to make a motion that we accept staff recommendation. And I think this is a wonderful discussion. And if we can come up with a better plan in the future, it's great. But for now, I would go with staff recommendation.
I'd second that. Motion and a second. Do we need further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
No?
No.
No.
One abstention.
So, two no's. Ms. Haney, Mr. Sessoms, an abstention, and the chair votes aye, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2, 1. And the motion passes.
No second.
Second by Mr. Zedrick. Motion by Mr. Neal. more.
Yes, there's more. There's more. There's more controversy. But this next one, I hope, is not too controversial. It actually passed last night. In December, there's a Lafayette River work group that came and met with staff here and leasing about the work that they're doing in the Lafayette River. And this is a picture of the Lafayette River. The Lafayette River, for you don't want, is one of the tributaries of the Elizabeth. In the past couple of years, a group of NOAA, CORE, City of Norfolk, CBF, have spent about $1.5 million doing oyster restoration in the Lafayette River. And one of their partners is the Elizabeth River Project, and they are always working to try to improve things in the Elizabeth River. And one of the things they've been able to do in the past several years is, right now the entire Elizabeth River in this picture is condemned, but it's condemned in a way that is totally prohibited from harvest of shellfish of any kind. We have two different kinds of condemnations. We have one that's restricted where you can relay. This one, because of heavy metals and things like that, creosote and different things is up there, you can't take shellfish out. So it's been a very good place for them to do restoration. They didn't have to worry about anything. But the Elizabeth River Project has gotten the health department to actually focus in on the Lafayette dew test, and they think they're close to being able to change the Lafayette from prohibited to restricted. And they are concerned that once that happens, that there would be the same land rush that we've seen on leases into this area. So they would like to have the Lafayette that's now prohibited to not be allowed to be leased above that red line. Now, I mean, that seems very reasonable. We've actually done some sites up there also at BMRC in years previous. But in discussions for this, we have seen this major land rush for leases in the past year and a half that Benny talked about this morning, where basically every little nook and cranny is being taken up. And one of the things that we've seen is about more than 20% of the leases actually being for areas in condemned waters. In order to, by code, for leasing a ground, you're supposed to be propagating shellfish by seed, shell, or cages, whatever you have to be. But there's supposed to be some sort of investment in the situation to make it better. And it doesn't seem like there's any business plan that you could ever come with. I mean, you hear the discussions right here about shell, how expensive it is. We know how expensive seed is, how expensive it is to get in cages. It's hard to imagine anybody wanting to take a piece of condemned ground, put the money there, and know that he's going to have to relay it out and add to his expenses so he wouldn't be able to compete. And a lot of these areas, this is just some examples that we've seen here. The bridge tunnel, Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel, you know, we got leases going up Hampton River. We got them up in Mill Creek. You saw last month, these are up the James River in this area that is closed because of the HRSD outfall. And all these little green things are applications within those areas. So staff would at least like to consider the possibility of, we have a regulation now for sanctuaries, and to actually include all areas that have not been leased, that are still unassigned, as broodstock sanctuaries for the future. I mean, we are seeing this downturn in spat set. We need to do any little thing that we can do to protect broodstock as possible spawning sources to take care of the areas that we are working. And in the leasing of these areas, it seems to be, just like we've seen on most of the other areas, it's pretty much leasing areas for slash and burn. You take what's there, you move off, and you get your money back and you make money. And, you know, I'm not positive that what we're seeing in this downturn in Spatset is in the fact that in this big leasing rush, we are little cubby holes, little places we had orchards in little sanctuary groups that were on areas that were muddy and maybe had a little hill out there that nobody ever thought to lease because you couldn't put any shelves. Now they're being taken up. They take those out of there, and then so that broodstock is gone from the system, and we're depending on 100% on the areas that we're harversting to be the brooding stock also. So it, and all these areas and condemned areas, you have the added work for law enforcement if somebody decides they're just going to go take what's out in there and not put anything back, then law enforcement has to be there and watching that and watching the relay activity when they should be out being taking care of the clean areas that we have that we're having enough problems on. So the staff recommendation is actually to advertise for a March public hearing on adding vacant and unassigned bottom that's condemned by the health department into our sanctuary regulation as a broodstock sanctuary, as a sanctuary for orchards, and having a public hearing on that in March. And it was passed by the Shellfish Committee last year.
Any questions or discussions about this aspect? I'd like to actually kind of reinforce Dr. Weston's point here on this. The Marine Police supervised the relaying of shellfish from condemned waters to clean waters for depuration prior to market sale. We have seen a run, literally, of 100, well, almost 80, 90, 70 applications here in condemned areas here. If they are to be used to harvest shellfish, the Marine Police is going to have to spend the time to oversee the relaying of those areas. They are already overloaded, overstrapped, and frankly, with the burdens that they have at the moment, to increase the number of relaying activities that they would have to handle is just, at this point, to me, just not responsible. So I support this concept at this point here. I think that it's a long-term smart thing to do. We have enough user conflicts to deal with as it is. We've seen the ramifications of that to some degree with the bill up in the General Assembly. I think this is something we need to get a bit more input on, but I do like the concept, personally. Mr. Ballard.
I think it is worthy of noting, although one doesn't exist in the state right now, but there are depuration facilities that wouldn't require VMRC relaying, where you can harvest shellfish from condemned waters, then send them through facilities. There is talk of actually a few being approved in Virginia under the Virginia Department of Shellfish Sanitation to harvest shellfish from condemned areas that wouldn't actually be relaying. So while I'm not necessarily against this, I think it's just something to keep in the back of our mind that these facilities do exist in other places in the country where they do allow harvesting from condemned areas and they go through these depuration facilities that are on land, not actually being relayed. And it's something that a few companies have thought about for Virginia.
It still requires law enforcement to oversee the harvest of that, even in that situation.
Mr. Erskine.
At the ASMAC, we discussed this as well. It was not as lengthy as the shells, but it was 6-2, 6 in favor of this proposal and 2 that were opposed. So I bring that up only that I do believe it's warranted to have a public hearing about this. So I'd make a motion to accept staff recommendation.
I'll second.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously. Dr. Weston, before we move off on a bit of a tangent, we have not adopted the procurement proceedings.
Okay.
Can we do that now?
Absolutely.
Because it would be quite a problem if we forget to do that.
Absolutely.
So the staff recommendation lays out the procurement process for the replenishment program here, and we need a motion to accept that procurement, those procurement procedures. Not for the actual procurement procedures itself.
You split the thing into two parts.
Right.
The contiguous parts, but the non-contiguous parts. I'll make a motion to accept staff recommendation.
And I second.
Motion and second. Any discussion?
I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Sessions.
I'm just a little confused. I thought we just voted on that process.
I thought we did too, but okay.
It's
best to reiterate to make Jane happy.
Yeah, exactly right here. I'm not sure that the procurement procedures were part of the shell planning discussion and vote, but let's have a separate vote on the procurement end of things because of just to be double safe.
So this is excluding the shells.
This is excluding the shells then.
No, I thought there was procurement within the shells as well, so I think we probably need a separate vote, I guess, just to be clear.
I would be happier just to be on the safe side. Because if the procurement procedures are not adequately adopted and there's a problem down the road, that's a big problem. So there's a motion by Mr. Neal here to accept the procurement procedures as presented by staff.
Yes.
Second by Mr. Zedron here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
One abstention.
Okay. So it's 5-2-1. So that's approved. Thank you.
Okay. We didn't really intend to get into this today, but since we've had some requests that I just sent out from the industry because of the weather to extend the seasons, and we have 5 different areas that are open now that would have to be extended for, they're asking for 10 days, so it would be from March 13th. But I kind of need to get a little bit of background because they asked for another thing also last night when they asked for this. And that we are beginning discussions with industry and the Shellfish Management Committee over effort. We've had this run-up in harvest, and the run-up in harvest has been through these two gear types. That the one on the left there is the hand scrape, which is a 22-inch version of the big brother there, which is an orchard dredge. Most of our industry works with the 22-inch version as opposed to the 4-foot version. And what we've seen is as our harvest has gone up and opportunities have gone up and other fisheries have not done so well, we've had this movement into oyster harvesting, and now we have a lot of people here where even with the great harvest that we're having now relative to what we had in the past, a lot of our areas are pretty much harvested out when half the season's over. Of our harvest last year, 85% of it came from these two gear types. The hand scrape is just followed up with the harvest. And we're up to now that we have 651 hand scrape licenses working the areas that we have, which is a very large number of hand scrape licenses. Our harvest in October was 33,000 bushels, which almost all of that was taken with the hand scrapes. We haven't got the rest of the harvest in and mandatory reporting, so October is the only one I have fairly good harvest from. But we have all these areas that were open this year, and we have areas that we anticipate opening next year. And like this one I showed you before, the ones that are opening next year, we see these yellow ones that things are declining and not looking very good. Have a couple areas that are kind of holding their own, one in the Great Wicomico, one in the James, and we have some upriver areas in the Rappahannock that are pretty much entirely depleted until we luck into some sort of natural set. Just for reference, and there's a lot of different ways I can show this, but I use biomass to show you these things. Last night,
later when we go into it more, I have some other ones. But this past year, we worked in this area of the Rappahannock, which is Area 1. Next year, we'll be working in Area 3 and Area 5. And in our stock assessment, when we started this year in Area 1, the biomass was, and I'll be using the same axis on the sides that for all of these slides. So where we were, you know, last year when we went into the season was up here. When we finally got around to checking them, when we got to the survey, we were down to this point, and there was still about a half a month of season left. That's, you know, we always see that knockdown in standing stock. But, you know, we had these great sets in 2010. These bars show fat set. And in 2012. And this area's got a little bit in these other years, but not very much. But if you can remember where we were leaving off when we left this area this past fall in Area 1, when we go to the next area next year, there are less orchards there than where we left it when guys were not getting their limits. Because, again, you look at the spat set, this area got spat set in 2010, but missed the spat sets in 11, 12, 13, and 14. And then this other area, this is all that's in that area and the areas that we look at. And we don't look at all the areas. We look at a representative sample that in most of these areas, we look at about 70% of what they have to harvest that we're surveying. So, but the trend is still the same. It's going to be a much lower amount of orchards available next year than what we've seen the past 2 years. Same thing in Tangier. This year, we were working in Area 2, which is this part in Tangier, this part in Pocomoke. Next year, we're going to the Area 1. This is where we were in Area 2 this year, where, again, watch the side. Next year's is we're starting right there. Same in New York. We worked in Area 1 this year. This is Area 1, same axis. This is where we'll be next year when we rotate into the Mobjack. So we're going to see a significant diminishment of available orchards next year with a really big fishery, a really big number of workers. And so what staff's trying to do is to get started early with the Shellfish Management Committee and to start dealing with this, because somehow we've got to reduce effort. Otherwise, everybody will be cleaning up these areas in days instead of weeks as it is now. And, you know, these are the types of things that the group's going to be talking about, you know, whether to reduce the daily limit or shorten the seasons or eliminate the gear altogether and go to hand dongs or patent dongs or quotas for individuals like we do rockfish, or reduce the number of licenses. So the thought process is starting, and there's already, you know, all sorts of scuttlebutt running through the watermen, but it's a process that we've got to work through as a committee, and we're going to try to meet regularly. And with guidance from the committee, you know, staff will prepare different scenarios that we can choose. I mean, the one that scares everybody to death that, you know, we think we need to reduce effort by half. And so the real easy one for staff to do is to say go from 8 bushels to 4 bushels a man per day, and then we're done. But that pretty much puts them out of business if they do that. So we've got to be more creative than that and look at some other ways of controlling effort. So I have an emergency. They passed two motions last night that they needed an emergency regulation for it. They wanted to bring it for the commission. The first one was, since they know that this word is going to be on the street, that we're going to be controlling effort and we're looking at hand scrapes and dredges, that we should put a statement in the regulation that says that we're not going to sell any more of those licenses until the commission changes, you know, has a strategy basically on what to do. Because we're afraid that now that we're talking about it, that people that don't have a hand scrape or a dredge license are going to run out and get them and be in the pool that we've got to consider. If you recall, we did set a control date back July 1st.
We said at this in our July commission meeting of July 1st, it said that we wouldn't necessarily consider you after that time. But, and we've had 250 people that have come in the fishery since we set that control date. So it's a very, very rapidly expanding industry. And there's people could still go buy stuff, and so to stop even more people from bustling once we do something, they suggested that by emergency we just stop selling those licenses right now until we have this worked out. The second thing that came up was we had gotten some emails and some petitions sent to the agency about extending the season because of ice, and they haven't been able to work for since the middle of February. And last night they passed a motion to add 10 days to those areas that were supposed to go out February 28th. Now, I mean, staff understands the, ice, and actually we set seasons. I mean, some of the thought processes we have on how long we set the seasons in these later seasons are we give them, like in Tangier and Pokemon, we give them 3 months when there's probably only 2 months of stuff there because we know they're going to have a lot of bad days. The York only had enough for 1 month probably to harvest there. In fact, it was gone in less than a month in New York. And, we gave them 2 months because we knew there would be bad days there. And they didn't have many bad days at the beginning of the season, but they did have a lot of bad days, when everything started to freeze and they've been frozen in. But we would have a real hard time recommending extending seasons looking at the situation for next year right now. We know they need orchards. We know the chucking houses need orchards. But next year is looking really bleak. So to stay and go another 2 weeks on what we have, which most of these areas are pretty down now, would not be, at least from biology, from our protecting the resource, a good decision. But that is included in that emergency regulation, should you want to pass it.
Questions from the commission? Mr. Zetron.
This 10 extra days there, asking for, do you think that if we pass this, that would be a sign that to the watermen that the commission here really has their interest at heart versus how much damage is that going to do to the stock, the 10 days we talked about?
We're pretty low now. I mean, on these areas they've been worked hard with all this extra effort of all these people that come in. And pretty much the lion's share of everything gets harvested up at the beginning of the season. So,
well, that's what I'm saying, is if there's not much stock to be harvested out there, what damage are we really doing to giving them 10 days?
Because they will continue to work and they will take more resource, and they will work to 2 o'clock and continue to grind on the shells that we have that we're losing in that time period. I mean, they do damage to the harvest area and the shells that make the shells disappear faster, that we're having a problem with keeping up with the shells now. So,
Ms. Haney.
I've seen what Tangier is going through, and I'm with you. I feel like we need to give Tangier, especially those 10 days back, that they haven't been able to work. They probably won't even get out at all this week. It's the only, they don't have another job that they can run off. It's all they have. I think it would mean a lot.
Mr. Erskine.
So the areas that we're talking about, just to be clear, is all the areas that opened that would close the end of February, right? So it's not just Tangier, Pocomoke. It would be York River.
Yeah, there's York River, Deep
right.
Rock. Rappahannock, upper area, and Milford Haven.
and that would be part of the 10-day, all of those would be part of the 10-day extension. However, you're indicating that the really only viable area would be Tangier-Pocomoke. The graph showed that area, Tangier-Pocomoke, still had some biomass left.
That was the beginning of the season. We went to Tangier before the season started.
Uh-huh.
So that wouldn't look like that.
But, I mean, it started at the highest level, I guess.
Level, yeah.
You know.
These grounds, if we gave them the 10 days, they wouldn't be worked next year anyway. They have 2 years to recover? They're rotational, so they wouldn't be worked.
Well, this upper, I mean, starting from Tangier, we will rotate out of that area, but we didn't get a very good spat set on that area. So, and there's only a 2-year rotation in Tangier. The next one down is the Rappahannock, Upper Rappahannock. That's going to be closed next year. There's no resource left to catch up there. Still have to grind it, but it's done for. It hadn't been a spat set in a number of years. Milford Haven is just a few little people that go out there. Actually, the Deep Rock is a Patdong area. That one's actually in pretty good shape because there's only a small number of boats out there. And then the other one is York. It's pretty much gone. They pretty much harvest that one away. And that one would be open also. So they all would or have gone. I mean, when you factor in the increase in the number of boats, it's been their hardest year that they've ever gone through today.
So this emergency regulation is calling for actually two actions. One is to
correct
cease and desist the sale of the hand scrapes and horseshoe dredge licenses and to extend this current season 10 days.
Correct.
Are we into discussion, or I guess we've kind of been discussion?
I think we are kind of into discussion mode.
I guess that I'm kind of relaying what other people have said here. You know, I understand our oysters going future is looking bleak compared to what the bounty we've had the last few years, and we need to take steps to address that, and that's going to be y'all's committee working on that kind of thing. But I do think it would be a very good public relations move to extend this season 10 days, and I don't know. I know you know more than I do. I just don't know what 10 days in this weather climate is going to do damage-wise. Because I get 10 days, I don't think. We're coldest. I don't know what days that. Now, of course, in my head, I'm thinking Tangier, where they're frozen in, and I'm not sure when they're going to fall out. I would go for this, knowing you got hard decisions, you got a hard job coming up the next couple of years.
Mr. Seth.
I'm going to echo the same thing. I think these guys are suffering, and I don't know the biology of it either. For 10 days, I think it would be great PR, to your point. So I certainly would go along with it.
Mr. Erskine.
I agree with the comments that have been made. Is it the fact that we would be opening it 10 days extending past February 28th, or the fact that it should be open 10 days after the ice is gone?
That's really a hard one. I mean, I said it so that it would actually be 10 working days, not 10 real days, so that it would go out on March 13th.
You mean 10 days that are available, like you can't oyster on Saturday and Sunday,
right?
That
right? Yeah.
So it'd be 10 working days, regardless of the weather.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of the weather.
Okay. From my perspective, the trade-off here is the suspension of licenses for scrapes and dredges. We don't want to make this any worse than it already is going to be. At least from my perspective. Mr. Zizra.
I would move that we approve this draft that we've been given and this would be against staff recommendation because you're recommending that they not extend it, right?
Right.
All right. I would move that we extend the season 10 days and also suspend the sale of hand scrape and oyster dredge licenses until further notice.
Motion by Mr. Zedron. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Ballard. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? The chair votes aye. The motion passes unanimously.